come on in.
And now, back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
The kids love him.
And your host,
welcome to paradise,
Bill Frank.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show here on KVTA News Talk 1520. I'm your host, Bill Frank. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is business, business, business. Each of my guests will share his or her perspective on an aspect of business. My next guest is an international expert on the 1930s French cars, and he has one of the world's foremost museums of Bugatti and classic French cars right here in Oxnard. Peter Mullen is the chairman emeritus of Mullen TBG and the founder and chairman of M Financial. His great love of the 1930s French cars with their curvaceous, custom-built bodies started as a grand passion. After his love at first sight of a Delahaye, he was smitten. He began to collect, restore, show, and even race some of these great French beauties. His passion soon gave way to a cause, the preservation of these classic French automobiles. The Mullen Auto Museum will serve as a legacy, one that captures and preserves a historic moment embodying both sublime style and superb engineering. He's the president of the American Bugatti Club and a member of the Bugatti Trust, joining us from Scotland. How are you tonight, Peter?
I'm great.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest here on the Bill Frank Show. I have been to your museum, loved it. I was just fascinated to find this little treasure right here in Oxnard with this fantastic collection of Bugatti and other French automobiles from the 1930s Art Deco era. So it begs the question, you know, give us some background. What led you to become one of the world's foremost collectors of Bugattis?
Well, I fell in love, Bill, with French cars about 35 years ago, having seen a Delahaye, which, by the way, at the time I couldn't pronounce or spell. But I thought that the sculptural lines, the rolling beauty of that car combined with the engineering and performance was something that I wanted to learn more about. And as you know, when you have passions, the more you learn, the more you're interested, and the more you're interested, the more you learn. And it's a kind of a spiral. So that's how it got started.
Well, it is a fascinating collection that you have put together and took a lot of time. It obviously took a lot of research for you to get this. And you picked an interesting segment of the automobile population to work with. This is a fairly expensive enterprise. So, you know, when you first got into this, did you realize the path that you were going down when you first started to collect these French cars?
Well, no. I think, candidly, I was interested in collecting some French cars and showing them in concours and racing. And one thing led to another, and a passion became a commitment, which probably became a sickness. So.
Well, I don't know. Some who've been to your museum wouldn't say that it's a sickness. It's very well done. But I guess it begs the bigger question, Peter, is, you know, why you? Why not some Frenchman preserving this piece of French history?
Well, that's a very good question, Bill. And I've thought about that question. But I don't think passions are actually geographical. So there are people that are passionate about Ferraris. They don't have to be Italian. There are people that are passionate about Mercedes, Gullwings. They don't have to be German. So I would say it's what strikes your fancy, and automobiles are really global in their appeal. And, I'm thrilled that I both fell in love with French cars and then was able to assemble a collection of those. And as I show them around the world and take them back to France, actually, earlier this year to Retromobile, the French appreciated it also, because they're happy that somebody's collecting and keeping and preserving for the future their legacy.
Well, it is an important thing that you are doing, too. No question about it. My guest is Peter Mullen. He has the Mullen Automotive Museum right here in Oxnard, one of the greatest collections of French automobiles from the 1930s era that's there. And, Peter, just some of the names of the cars that are there may not be familiar to many of my listeners, because, frankly, many of my listeners weren't alive when these cars first came out. But there's the Bugatti. And I find it interesting, the Bugatti name sounds almost more Italian than French. Was the man Bugatti who designed these cars, was he Italian by birth or heritage?
Sure. The Bugattis were Italian. Carlo Bugatti, the father of Ettore Bugatti, was an Italian furniture maker. But the family moved early to France, to Molsheim. And so all of the Bugatti automobiles were made in France. And the family actually resided there, and they're a kind of a wonderfully artistic family that were engaged in lots of things, sculpture, painting, graphics, drawing, carriages, cars, silverware, silver work, musical instruments. I mean, it's a little bit mind-boggling, the artistry of this family.
Well, it is incredible, and you've captured much of that there at your museum as well. So anybody who goes there can see examples of the sculpture, examples of the furniture, etc., Peter. But the automobiles are really the main pièce de résistance there. So there's the Bugatti, there's the Delage, you have the Delahaye that you had mentioned before, Hispanos, Souza, the Talbot, Lagos, and Voisin. These are all the brands of automobiles that were there. What is it specifically about French cars, Peter, that catches your eye? You know, you said the power and the performance. Most of us don't think as French cars today as performance automobiles, but I guess in their time they were really the muscle cars of their era.
Well, they were the apex of the automobile in the 30s. There's no question about it, not just in performance, but Bugatti won almost all the races they raced in, as well as Delage and Delahaye and Talbot Lago, for that matter. But the French kind of combined three amazing attributes, which was performance, speed, performance, via engineering excellence, which meant long-lasting as well as fast. And then they clothed these cars with this gorgeous bodywork that really looks, you know, like aerodynamic shapes. You just can't look at it without wanting to touch the shape. So they basically created the apex of the automobile world, the best of the best, from 1930 to 1940. And I don't think it's ever been duplicated, and post-war the French certainly weren't capable of reinstating that level because the country was, in shambles after the war.
Sure, absolutely devastated after World War II. My guest is Peter Mullen, head of the Mullen Automotive Museum here in Oxnard. And Peter, you touched on something in that last answer that it was fascinating to me, and I didn't know it until I'd visited your museum, and that is that when you bought a car from any of these manufacturers, Bugatti or any of them, in the 1930s, what you were really buying was a powertrain and a chassis, and that every body, every coach was custom-made by a craftsman, so that every car is just a little bit different and unique from the others. Talk to us about that craftsman style and why the automobiles were manufactured that way.
Well, that's mostly correct, what you said. Many cars actually were made and bodied by the factory, but with the bespoke cars particularly, a person that was an aficionado of automobiles would buy a rolling chassis, as you mentioned, and then they would take it to a carrossier, which is a bodybuilder, a coach builder, and they'd get interviewed the way an architect would interview you before they designed a house. I mean, are you a country guy or a city guy? Are you a family man? Are you a man about town? Do you like to go on picnics? Do you stick around in the business area? Are you a fast driver, a slow driver? Do you have a big family, a small family, etc.? And after that interview, they'd go to work on a design, and 3 or 4 months later, you'd get your car, and you might love it, you might hate it, but it was yours, and you better pick a good designer. But they were really custom-built to the customer.
Well, that's interesting, and it brings up two very interesting points. First of all, in the 1930s, not everybody owned a car. So this was truly something that basically the middle class on up could afford. And how did people know what their driving patterns were, what their needs were? Because cars were relatively new at that time, and you might not know what your needs are when you go to be interviewed to have your chassis designed.
Well, by the 30s, actually, cars were pretty broadly spread because the first automobiles were made and driven in the late 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
So by the 30s, people had been familiar with the automobile for a long time. I mean, Henry Ford developed the famous Ford Lizzie, in the 19-teens. So most of these candidates to purchase one of these cars had something in mind. Most of them were relatively affluent because they had to not only buy the car but then build the body. And so the combination of the artistry of the body maker and the sophistication of the client, it actually isn't too surprising that they figured out what they wanted.
All right. My guest is Peter Mullen. So that's the front half, designing the car and understanding it. But also, I'm thinking about the back half. When you go to resell a car like that, because it is so custom-made, how do you find a buyer who wants to have who has the exact same set of criteria that you did when you designed the car?
That is a great question. And there are some of these designs that are brilliant and recognized as rolling sculpture the world over, and some are not. So if you're lucky enough to have participated in one that became an icon, of course, when you rent to resell it, there was plenty of people lining up at the door. But there are certainly some French cars that it'd be tough to move them on to the next owner, particularly if they're so exotic and out of the norm that it's only a very eclectic taste that would find them attractive.
I see. My guest is Peter Mullen. We're talking about the Mullen Automotive Museum here in Oxnard. And Peter, I want to focus in on the museum if I can for a while. For me, it was a hidden gem. I didn't know that it was there. And I guess my first question to you is, you know, why did you choose to locate the Mullen Automotive Museum right here in Oxnard?
Well, a couple of reasons, but the primary reason was because Otis Chandler, who was a friend of mine and had ultimately died after building that museum and putting his cars into it, I was able to talk to the Chandler family and acquire the building, which, because it was done with the kind of taste and discipline that Otis Chandler would put to it, was custom built for an automotive museum. So instead of finding a spot and building my own, I thought, why wouldn't I capitalize and enjoy the legacy that Otis Chandler left?
Sure.
So that's the way it happened. I also love Oxnard. It's an extraordinary place. I think Oxnard is a hidden jewel myself. And I went to UC Santa Barbara and drove that up and down from Los Angeles for a lot of years. And with Santa Barbara coming south and Los Angeles coming north, I think Oxnard is kind of the last great undiscovered beach city. So I thought it was a great spot to locate something that would attract the public, and driving along Highway 1 up to Oxnard along the coastline, you know, it's tough to beat that trip.
Well, it is, and I think all of my listeners would agree with what you have to say. My guest is Peter Mullen. So, Peter, what would visitors expect to see when they come to your museum?
Well, our objective, Bill, was to recreate the 1936 Paris Salon. Every year in Paris in that era, there would be essentially an auto show, and the best of the best would assemble in the Palais Royal. And it was a particular look, with heavily decorated with a different ceiling treatment every year, different wall treatment, etc. And so I kind of fell in love with looking at those old pictures and said, I want this museum to look like the Paris Salon of 1936. So people that come to the museum will instantly be struck that they have been pushed back in time by 70 years and are enjoying what the people that loved automobiles in the 30s got to see when the new cars came out.
And the museum is done all up in the Art Deco style, which was the architectural and design style of the period. What is it about the architectural Art Deco style that appeals to you so much, Peter?
Well, starting in 1925, with the international, essentially, meeting of all of the designers around the world for the decorative art and industry, that was kind of a tipping point of when utilitarian objects became beautifully constructed as opposed to just functional. So it could be a toaster, it could be a radio, it could be a vacuum cleaner, but they took on an art form. And the automobile in that period was kind of the center of the Art Deco movement, and then it went out from there to all these other items. And Concours d'Elegance, which were a show of elegance, included the car, a woman, her gown, the couture gown, her shoes, her purse, her hat, her dog, And so it was the package of presentation that is what stimulated the early Concours d'Elegance. And so that had ramifications of all number of items beyond cars. So that's why I focused on Art Deco as the theme, with the centerpiece being the cars.
Well, it certainly is a beautiful museum. One of the things that caught my eye, Peter, was as you walk in the canopy, as you walk into the museum there by both the American and the French flags. Tell us about that canopy and how that came to be.
Well, that was kind of one of those ideas that came out of the blue, and you'd have to ask yourself whether that was a dream or a nightmare. But in any case, we definitely wanted something to cover the entryway there. And instead of doing a classic rooftop structure that people would walk under when going into a building, I thought to myself, well, if you put layers of windshields of cars and stack them one on top of the other, it would be a beautiful jewel-like effect of the glistening of windshields as their curves melded one into the other. And so when people looked up, they got an entirely different sense, and I'm sure it's the first time in their life they've ever walked under 500 windshields. So,
well, it was amazing. I went in on a sunny day, and the glistening that you get off of those windscreens is incredible. Now, Peter, the museum itself, it's really a living museum. I mean, these cars are shown throughout the world. There's history that goes on behind them. Talk to us about the living museum aspect of the Mullen Automotive Museum.
Well, the purpose of the museum was really to collect, preserve, restore, preserve these wonderful cars from the past. And primarily, though, a thrust toward education. You know, what are these cars? How did they get built? What was the engineering breakthroughs at the time? What impact did they have on the world around them? And so once you say that's your objective, then taking them out to the public, because everybody can't come to Oxnard, and showing them around the world is really part of the education outreach. So that's what we do, and participate in concours around the world, as well as I race in Europe and in the U.S. And on the track, I mean, we're showing cars that did Grand Prix races in the 30s and Le Mans races in the 30s, and so people enjoy seeing those cars brought back to life and then racing on a track and competing.
It's got to be something spectacular. My guest has been Peter Mullen. He is the head of the Mullen Automotive Museum right here in Oxnard. Peter, if people are intrigued, they want to see the museum, maybe learn more about these fine cars that you've collected, where would you direct them to go?
Well, we have a website, www.mullenautomotivemuseum.com, that lists not only the collection, but the days that were open to the public and the admission fees, and what people could expect to find, as well as what shows are coming up. We have rotating shows. We've got a Voisin exhibition coming up, opening in November. We've opened an art gallery for automobile memorabilia art, paintings, sculpture, etc. So the website really lays it out and allows people to make advance reservations to come to the museum. And to me, that's the kind of simplest way to go at it.
All right, and that's Mullen, M-U-L-L-I-N, automotivemuseum.com. Peter, thank you so much for taking time out of your evening over there in Scotland to be with us. It has been a delight. We'll talk to you down the road.
Terrific, Bill. Nice talking with you.
Thanks.